Good afternoon. So my name is Judy Temple. I work for Texas Health and Human Services Commission, the state of Texas, responsible for the delivery of social services in Texas. And my presentation today is on a survey that Texas conducted with evacuees of Hurricane Katrina in May and June of last year. Hurricane Katrina, as you all know, resulted in the largest sudden relocation of Americans in the country's history. The hurricane displaced over 1 million people, and many of the displaced came to Texas. Soon after the hurricane, it became clear that a lot of the evacuees were going to remain in Texas indefinitely. So to find out more about their plans and which social services they might need, the state decided to contract with the Gallup organization to survey the population. The target population for the survey was all evacuees who resided in Texas in May and June of 2006, which was 9 to 10 months after the hurricane had hit the coast. Gallup identified the population from a database of households that registered with FEMA for emergency aid. The survey was designed to provide robust estimates statewide, but also for four regions of the state. Gallup stratified the sample by three regions where evacuees were most concentrated: in the Houston area, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and the Austin-San Antonio area. The fourth stratum, West and South Texas, covered the remaining areas of the state. In the end, Gallup estimated that about 250,000 evacuees lived in Texas as of May and June of 2006. The largest number of evacuees, about 111,000 or 44%, were located in the Houston area. About 250,000 were located in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and another 250,000 were located in the Austin-San Antonio area. Overall, Gallup completed 15 to 20 minute telephone interviews with 6,415 evacuee households. As you can see here, the survey covered a wide range of topics, including housing, employment, health status, health coverage, service need and utilization, and demographic information. Respondents were asked to report their families' service needs and utilization before the hurricane and at the time of the survey, and also to predict their utilization at three points of time in the future: 6 months, 1 year, and 2 years. So what did the survey tell us about the population? Our first finding was that most of the evacuees who came to Texas were very economically insecure even before the hurricane. The survey results showed that prior to the hurricane, about 60% of evacuee households earned less than $20,000 per year. Evacuees were also predominantly young, African American, female, and living in households with children. A study that was just published in September by the Brookings Institute similarly found that residents of New Orleans who left the city for Texas were younger, poorer, more likely to be African American, and more likely to have children than residents who relocated within Louisiana. Our next finding was that a significant number of evacuees expected to stay in Texas for the foreseeable future. As you can see here, 6 months into the future, nearly 1.5 years after Katrina, 64% believe they would still be in Texas. Then moving forward 2 years, 40% believe they'd still be in the state. And many more evacuees, represented on this slide by the middle portion of the bars, the dark gray, did not know where they would be and could likely remain in the state as well. Our third finding was that 9 to 10 months after Hurricane Katrina, the evacuees continued to have significant employment, housing, and health needs. In May and June of 2006, the evacuees were dealing with high unemployment, which had increased from 9% before the hurricane to 59% at the time of the survey. Of course, course, one result of high unemployment is low income, and this slide shows the extremely low monthly household incomes reported by the evacuees, as represented by the red bars. At the time of the survey, over 40% of evacuee households earn less than $500 a month, which basically means they virtually had no income. This slide also shows the disparity between the evacuees' earnings and that of other Texas residents, represented by the gray bars. And for example, evacuee households were 8 times as likely to earn less than $500 a month than other Texans. When the survey was conducted, the initial housing crisis had stabilized. It was 10 months later. But 12% of the evacuees still lived in temporary shelter or someone else's home. In addition, 54% of the evacuees were receiving housing subsidies, up from about 18% before Katrina. The evacuees' perception of their health status had also declined. Before Katrina, 20% of the respondents described their physical health as poor or fair. But at the time of the survey, that number was 37%. The evacuees' perception of their mental health decreased even more. Before Katrina, 15% of the respondents described their mental health status as poor or fair. But at the time of the survey, 40% described their mental health status as poor or fair. The dotted line on the slide represents the percentage of Louisiana residents in 2004 who described their general health as poor or fair according to the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, the BRFSS. And this number, 19%, is similar to the pre-hurricane ratings in our survey. In addition, almost 1 out of 4 respondents reported that someone in their household had a physical or mental disability that limited their daily functioning. While their health needs increased, fewer evacuees had health insurance. The rate of uninsured among the evacuees had doubled since before Katrina. And as you can see here, the hurricane had a particularly dramatic effect on children's health coverage. Their uninsured rate nearly quadrupled from 8 to 30%. And this includes children who were previously covered by public health programs such as Medicaid and CHIP. Among those without health insurance, 40% of the evacuee households reported that they had delayed or avoided getting health care. About 1/3 had problems getting needed care, and about 1/3 incurred major medical costs while they'd been in the state. Our fourth finding was that even though they reported these declines in health and income, the evacuees did not utilize all the state health and human services that were available to them. This finding was somewhat surprising because in the aftermath of the hurricane, Texas eased its Medicaid eligibility requirements and enrollment process so that most uninsured Katrina evacuees could qualify for Medicaid on a temporary basis. And this slide shows the list of evacuees that were eligible for emergency coverage, including parents, pregnant women, and children under age 19. Despite our efforts to help enroll people in the Medicaid program, fewer people than expected signed up. Only 36% of evacuee households reported receiving Medicaid or CHIP at the time of the survey, down from about 47% before Katrina. However, survey results also suggested that more evacuees intended to request these benefits in the near future. Unlike Medicaid, respondents had increased their utilization of food stamps, housing subsidies, and unemployment benefits after the hurricane. This graph shows that the use of both housing subsidies and unemployment benefits increased sharply after the hurricane, and food stamps also experienced a small increase. And as for child care subsidies and direct cash assistance, the evacuees had not increased their utilization at the time of the survey, but they did expect to do so within the following 6 months. So to sum up the last 3 slides, Katrina was affecting short-term service utilization by the evacuees, but we found that over 2 years, regardless of whether the utilization had gone up or down, the evacuees expected their utilization to return to pre-hurricane levels. So, in conclusion, our results showed a gap between the evacuees' reported needs and their service utilization. And so how do we explain this? Well, first, evacuees use services outside of state government. After the hurricane, many nonprofit organizations and local public agencies assisted the evacuees with services such as housing, food, and medical care. And our results also suggest that evacuees initially focused on higher order priorities, such as food and shelter, before applying for health benefits. Also, some evacuees may have waited until they utilized health benefits before they applied for Medicaid, rather than applying for Medicaid ahead of time. The survey provided us with a rich data source for planning purposes. For example, the results guided the state to allocate a portion of its Title 20 Social Services Block Grant to cover the cost of medication, TB support services, and mental health and substance abuse services for the evacuees. The survey results also allowed Texas to request an adjustment in the amount of federal matching Medicaid funds allotted to the states. And the Texas Health and Human Services Commission also supplied other state and local agencies, such as in Houston, with survey data for planning purposes. Finally, the evacuees had a fairly positive outlook both on their experiences with Texas Health and Human Services and on their future lives. 60% of those surveyed rated Texas' ability to respond to their needs as excellent or very good. And despite their loss of stability, income, and security, evacuees remained optimistic, as 60% also believed their life would ultimately be better than it was before the hurricane. I want to acknowledge my colleagues at Texas Health and Human Services Commission who co-authored this paper. Thank you for your time. If you would like a copy of the full report, please contact me. Sure.
Yeah. How many of them are actually
to return? To Louisiana?
Yeah.
We really don't have a way of tracking exactly how many evacuees have remained in Texas. They've been really integrated into our enrollment data and pretty much assimilated into Texas residents at this point. Yes.
But I'm wondering if with the large in-migration and the change in demographics, if there's an expectation that the political values of Texas may change?
Well, you know, one can only hope. But, you know, it is a very small proportion of the overall population. We have not, for instance, seen an impact in our Medicaid enrollment that, like we thought we would.
So.
There you go. Some of them did. Again, our sense is that people were using other types of services, and maybe they just were prioritizing food and shelter first and jobs. You probably know better than I do the, you know, very direct type of help that was out there to fill out the forms. I mean, all I know is that it was very simplified and streamlined, and it was supposed to be a lot easier to fill out.
Okay.
So, No, they, yeah, so, yeah.
Thank you. But even for the short term, they weren't able to utilize them. And they ended up having to do things like totally getting them into the Arizona system so that they could get a web chat for 2 weeks.
Right.
Is there any way that is Texas looking at doing anything like that?
Well, I think that the whole idea of the... I think just the whole idea of the waiver to provide people very quickly and more easily with these benefits was to get them into sort of get them through the gate and then hopefully get them re-enrolled because obviously a lot of them were more than eligible. I don't know if that answers your question. I don't think there's anything now in the works for doing that. I couldn't answer that in any... I don't have any hard evidence, but like in Austin, for instance, there certainly seems to be... I know, for instance, Austin's a big music town, and there is a sense of a community after the hurricane. Musicians in town were sort of staying together, and I know they were performing and stuff like that. But and there are... Obviously, there have been concentrations in each city, so... My sense is yes, but I couldn't tell you for sure.
And your sense as to why they would want to stay in Texas rather than return to a higher standard of living in Texas than Louisiana?
Not necessarily, but I think, you know, just because of the devastation, I don't think, you know, people don't have resources to go back and rebuild, I would say.
But it sounds like if they had a choice, it sounds like from your survey that you're saying that even if they maybe are
I'd like to say that it's because they want to stay in Texas, but I'm sure it's just a matter of resources and the fact that they're not ready to go back. There's nothing there for them.
Also, a number of historically residents from New Orleans have moved to Houston. There's my family that was already there for some people.
Right. And I think regionally, I think the people that were in Houston were more likely to say they were going to go back than other parts of the state.
I know we had a large group of Phoenix.
You added, you know, if they do have family ties as well.
Maybe I misunderstood. I thought you were saying that unemployment was high because they didn't have a job.
Right. Again, that, you know, and that was 9 to 10 months later. We don't have any data now to know whether they have found jobs, but, you know.
We have a few minutes still. I should finish quickly. Can I pose another couple of questions that you may or may not have knowledge
of? Sure.
That New Orleans increased crime in Houston upon the
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I remember reading that as well, but I don't know where it is at
and
now.
There were a lot of issues related to school and being able to adapt to the environment, which you would expect. That would be a minimal. Has some of that come about their academic performance and things like that?
I don't, but if you'd like me to follow up, I'd be happy to if you want to. Can we go?
I'll be in touch.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.